Comrades, you are listening to Good Morning Comrade. You can check us out on WHIVFM 102.3. You can also check us out online, goodmorningcomrade.com, all the stuff. We have today on the show, full house. We got Scott, we got me, we got Robert, and we have Aaron. And we also have a very special guest today. Hey, Aaron. We have a very special guest. We have Matt Chrisman. Gonna have him talking a little bit about the grill pill and sort of like how we can be responding to the world, how things are going like right now when things are like, we're in the middle of coronavirus, everything's really unclear. So how you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
How's everybody doing?
Thanks for being here.
I mean, other than being confused about what the grill pill is, because you don't tell me what the grill pill is, you just keep saying grill pill. I feel like you're marketing towards me. Like,
what's the grill pill?
The grill pill mindset. So yeah, I've been really enjoying at work. I've been watching your daily vlogs, and first I was really concerned about your mental health, Matt. And now I'm just like,
alone in that.
Now I'm just like, I'm like, oh, I think I
That's
found
not helping.
My, I didn't know my spiritual guru would come from Chapo Trap House, but but here he is. So it's like, can you just give like a short, I know you did like a whole hour of like, what is the grill pill, but can you like condense that for people who are listening, like don't have a grasp?
Sure.
That concept.
So it started off as an ironic thing, as most of anything I say on the internet starts off, because it was in response to the Biden seizure of the Democratic nomination. I saw that a lot of people, you know, who had put a lot of energy into an emotional commitment to the Bernie campaign, didn't really have anywhere to put it, and I saw a lot of them, including myself, with this drive to put it towards this new, the new terrain of owning Biden supporters or fighting with Biden people and saying, well, it's not necessary to vote for Biden, blah, blah, blah. And I realized that that was going to be a very sterile and unproductive way to, for anyone to be. So I just decided that I was going to take a grill. I just want a grill, referencing the meme that we all love of the hapless suburban dad with his apron and his spatula saying, politics, schmolitics, I just want to grill. And it was just a way to get across the idea that the presidential election, although it was a huge terrain of support of conflict, and I think that a lot of gains were made in terms of long-term organizing, in the short term, there's really nothing left to do, and so you shouldn't really care about it. And if you have to have some sort of engagement with some, you know, bellowing liberal, the response is just not my problem. You know, you guys got what you want, and don't worry about it. But I realized, especially after the coronavirus, you know, really kicked into gear, and we all got shut up, people got shut up in their homes, that the drive to have somewhere to put all that energy is not going away, and that the lure of more sterile combat on Twitter was going to be really strong.
Yeah.
So my thought was, I kind of took that idea of the grilling, and I said, well, let's make that, like, literal, you know? Like, if you are finding yourself, and I was, this all started as a way to like manage my own feelings towards the internet and balance that, and, you know, trying to make political convictions part of a healthy behavioral diet as opposed to an unhealthy one, to take that energy that I was going to spend on a totally pointless battle online with strangers, and instead use it to further something in my own life, take that energy and put it towards something near me that could involve my actual wholehearted investment of mind and spirit. And that the hope is, because a lot of people say, well, what does that do about, you know, Biden? What does that do about Trump? What does that do about coronavirus? Well, it doesn't do anything. But the thing is, there's nothing that most of us in a moment by moment capacity can do about that. Mm-hmm. And we can't, I think, because the internet is so immediate, it's very hard for us to accept the reality of that.
Yeah.
Because it feels doesn't feel that way. It feels like we can change anything with a point and click, but in reality, we can't. And a way to remind yourself of that is to do things that have more friction attached to them. And that means things that are not pseudo conversations and pseudo conflicts online. Those are things that require you to apply actual, you know, bodily and mind energy towards a constructive task that is challenging, and that if it is pursued, will leave with something made, something physical or a talent or something that has connected you to your actual desires,
mm-hmm.
not the ones that are not your web urges, which are really just your misdirected and thwarted desires, but what you actually want to do in a moment. And that the hope I have is that doing that means that as this incredibly liquid situation re-territorializes, that whatever is to be done politically will be easier to divine and easier to engage with if you have practiced your mind not to seek the terrain in a virtual realm, but in the one closest to you. That's it in a nutshell.
So I guess one of the things that immediately came to mind when this subject came up, and I don't know, Aaron, you might, I think you mentioned, not, I don't remember, but this kind of like reminds me a little bit about when people talk about things like self-care or stuff like that, but it's definitely not it doesn't feel the same. Is it similar to healthcare? Is it like healthcare, is it like self-care rather in a way, or is it something different?
Well, the thing is, people have said, it's like self-care. Some people have said it's like clean your room, like Jordan Peterson. And like, there is a basic sense that you have to, you know, engage the world around you. Mm-hmm. The problem with self-care is that it implies indulgence,
mm-hmm.
and it implies escape. Like that, when people say self-care, what they're really imagining is something that is going to make them, that is going to give them something to distract them from some underlying sense of anime or ennui. I would say that I mean, you have to do that to some degree to maintain stability in life. You know, watch TV, go on the internet, you know, do some tweets, do some owns. But that it cannot be the consuming focus of your non-alienated leisure time.
Mm-hmm.
Self-care, like, unfortunately, self-care has become super capitalized. It's become really commodified. I'm a social worker, so mental health is it's my thing. Hasn't been great for me lately, but I do try. But self-care is essentially doing those things that allow you to just keep moving through the slog that is our day-to-day existence. So when we're like, I think when people think about self-care, they think about, okay, like buy another bath bomb from Lush. Like,
right, yes.
Watch a bunch of YouTube videos about like stuff other people are buying. Like, oh, I'm not, you know what, I'm just going to eat brownies for dinner. # self-care. You know, those are all like kind of the memeified versions of that. But self-care is, you know, decide, like, honestly, if we're talking about kind of, because I've been really struggling lately with just trying to, you know, figure out what is productive for me to engage with politically and what isn't, and like what do I have control over. And it's like, mm-hmm. it's saying, okay, like I don't have control over how other people view
mm-hmm.
The fact that Tara Reid has credibly accused Joe Biden of rape. So I maybe should stop getting into Twitter fights with people about it, because like I'm not going to actually change anybody's mind. Like that has, like I'm not good at that right now. But like self-care for me would be like disengaging from that, maybe that specific thing, because it's not helpful in the long term for me, and it's not like moving anything forward. So it's like self-care, it's really, I just really encourage everybody to like stop thinking about it as like self-indulgent, and think about it more as like, the world is shit, how are you going to be able to continue trying to make the world less shit without burning yourself out quickly?
I think like self-care has been kind of moralized, like this like kind of a moral, like,
look at me thing put on conspicuous it. Self-care.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like those people that go to church like just to be seen at church and stuff like that. It's like, oh, don't you see like how well I'm doing? Like I'm mm-hmm. doing the fun thing. But I mean, it's more like a maintenance. Like when you get so drunk, you're like, oh man, I have to grab the grass so I don't fall off the planet and shit. Like,
because what you're doing is self-care in a capitalist context, an indulgent context, is that you are not confronting anything. You're fleeing it. And the thing about that is that, by definition, anything you seek to distract yourself will over time lose novelty.
Yeah.
And so you will have to go deeper into it, or find something more esoteric or more damaging or more expensive or in some way further pulling you away from any constructive personal track, because you have to keep accelerating your engagement with something that is probably, if it's purely distracting, is not good for you in either physical, some combination of the physical and spiritual way. And so that is because it doesn't push back, I would say, is a problem with self-care beyond anything.
Yeah, it's kind of like
push back.
It could kind of become its own like thing, and you're like get caught up in it instead of doing anything like useful. But like more like meaningful or whatever. But like,
I mean, like that, like useful is dangerous because we think in such capitalist terms that we think, productive. But that, like, there is, I don't think that this is, speaking wildly out of turn to claim that I think that in any given moment we are capable of grappling towards what we think is the right thing to be doing. It's just that there is an overwhelming amount of alienation around us and involved, not just within ourselves, but with everyone around us.
Mm-hmm.
It makes recognizing that very difficult.
Yeah. I think it sort of like feels like a frictionless slide. Like it's almost like a greased up, like incline going down, and you can't stop yourself almost.
Yes.
My therapist said something super interesting to me. So it's like very interesting being in therapy, like as a therapist, because it's like the way other people point stuff out. But and this applies to me, but I think applies to a lot of leftists in general, that we see how like deeply dysfunctional so much of the world is and so much of our society is, and just how much work there is to do, that we're not giving ourselves credit for like the smaller victories. And so we're not getting those dopamine hits for stuff that we have accomplished. Like, I know, like very specifically with Bernie not winning the nomination, I think, you know, a lot of people are feeling very despondent about that. But, you know, if we're able to like take a step back and look and see like, oh, like he was second place and like against a lot of very intense odds and like with a lot of like kind of fuckery going along.
I mean, he was in second place with the whole field against him. Like,
yeah. And like the idea that like an open democratic socialist would be, you know, in this, like, be able to be influencing the Democratic Party at all is like really amazing. But it's so hard to like stop and just be happy about those gains, because we're like, okay, but you know, there's still so much left to do.
It is kind of weird. It's kind of weird analyzing it, because it's like, you watch the old past ones and like Bill Clinton, like kind of coming ahead of the whole field and like having these media appearances. And it was like, it's kind of almost like we had that same thing, but like the Democratic Party was like, no, we don't want that. Like, we don't want that thing that works. Like, we're just going to push this like a death agenda.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
We're just going to like, oh, sorry.
No, you're good. Finish, please.
No, I'm saying it's like, we just want to like, we're just going to start doing these like $100,000, like a ticket things to like see Obama and Hillary. To see like Joe Biden and Hillary like talk at the same time. It's like, we're just going to like take all the money we can out of this thing.
Let me ask you a question, Matt, that's been like, it's bouncing around in my head ever since like I've started watching your vlogs with the grill pill. Is that okay? So the first thing that pops up in my head is I think, okay, is this like, it's kind of the centrist that still lives in me that I haven't killed yet. Is this a privileged position to have? Because that's like the first argument that pops in my head is like, well, of course, because if you can grill, then you are privileged enough to, you don't have to worry about the problems of the world while people are dying and have to work shitty jobs because of the coronavirus. And then second, when I like, you retweeted, I put that picture of the arcade cabinet on Twitter. Like, I had to go like on a literal like quest. Like, I drove 300 miles, you know, one way,
across,
so
600
miles total to go get this thing. And it got me thinking, like, halfway when I'm back, I'm like, am I the Szechuan sauce kid? Am I like going on like a quest to like try to live in the 90s because I can't deal with the world as it is? Like, is this healthy? I don't know. This is what I thought of.
I think it's cool to have like hobbies and like nostalgia, but like, as long as you're not screaming at the McDonald's employees and shit, face to have more Szechuan sauce. Mm-hmm.
I think the privilege question is interesting, because obviously, yes, it's privilege. Like, everybody who is materially secure and quarantined is obviously in a more privileged position than anybody who has to work in quote unquote essential job, you know, mm-hmm. in that sense. But I would say that to anyone who says that's privileged, okay, so what? Like, yeah. what is the fact that that's privileged change about the situation? Does the fact, like, what it is really saying, and I think most people, I think that, I mean, obviously, if it's these are arguments happening on Twitter, the people making them are pretty much by definition relatively privileged. What they're saying is that I feel some sort of self-awareness and guilt about my relative privilege, and that I need to expunge it somehow. And the way they expunge it is by going on online and making and having political arguments. That is to them like a an indulgence that buys them indulgence for the sin of not being out there with everybody else working, being quarantined.
Yeah, it's
but that doesn't actually fix anything for you or anyone else, including the people who aren't privileged enough to stay home.
And it's a privilege or it's an indulgence, as you said before, that they masquerade as work, as they masquerade as doing good. And they're saying that we're doing all these things that are like correcting. What are you doing? You're just screaming at somebody in, a, you know, 240 characters and you're not, you know, you're basically creating a whole bunch of confusion in making somebody feel bad because they're making themselves happy for a few minutes. You know,
there's so many white centrist ladies with buy me a coffee in their Twitter bios, and they're like, if you appreciate the work I put into these tweets, and I'm like, I don't, like, I just don't even slightly.
You don't even have to set up a blog. You used to ask for that. That's how old I am. I remember we used to ask for like coffee with your little personal blog that people would stumble along. You don't have to. People are too lazy to have blogs anymore.
Yeah, y'all pay me to tweet. Oh. Okay,
like.
It's so ridiculous.
Didn't like the blog market crash and it was a big thing.
The
like,
blog market line go down.
Oh my God. But like, I also like, I really do think like when we're talking about kind of privilege in these, it really does make me think that so many people on Twitter who are making these arguments just have really never met a poor person before, because like this idea is, it's so patronizing. The idea that if you are poor, your life is just an unending series of miserable days and miserable nights, and you never have fun and you don't have connections with people and you don't have political opinions and you don't read the news. Like that is like a very, very privileged position. People have fun. Like people have fun no matter what socioeconomic status you're in, and it looks different. And there's this like patronizing of like, oh, poor people can't have fun, and they're like, they don't have time and they don't have the ability to have fun. And that's like a deeply untrue, deeply problematic, and like very, very patronizing argument.
As someone who's raised Catholic, I understand it. Go ahead, Matt.
I think, but the thing to remember though, and I obviously this is
same,
you don't want to import bad faith to people you don't know, so I would never say this about a specific person, mm-hmm. but I think given my observation of the phenomenon that in general people who bring that up, I see this with any kind of attempt to get prescriptivist in behavior at all, like people say it's privileged to say don't do this thing, and right. some people don't have the freedom not to do it, you know, but they're really just defending that they like doing it,
mm-hmm.
and that they can't think of a coherent justification. So why am I online fighting about who's going to be president when that's not going to matter at all? Well, because actually it's privileged to, you know, do something closer to your hands and closer to your attention that, mm-hmm. you know, is rewarding in a real sense. But that doesn't stop you from doing it. That's a way for you to feel better about staying online.
Mm-hmm.
That's
interesting.
I mean, I think that like any of these things that like relate to Twitter are kind of like skewed, because like it does give people like a platform. Like they can kind of like cultivate these ideas in a certain way, but like other people will just be like, oh yeah, this is me doing like the work, kind of like mm-hmm. that's just where you kind of go to like spar with people and like figure out your ideology in a certain way.
Well, don't you feel that crush, Jeff? Because like, well, all of us actually, because we're in the DSA, like there's this thing, it's kind of like pecking order of like, oh, who's doing the most? Like
not me.
Like, I know exactly. Like who's oh can't go. We can't do XYZ because that's you know bourgeoisie. Whatever.
Oh,
whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, the electoral politics being like bourgeois politics or something like that. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think that's what you're kind of getting at, right?
Yeah.
When people sort of get at that, and it's not the case necessarily, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we can't, as like you know, regular working people organized together can't have an impact on it. That was what the entire Bernie Sanders campaign was, and sort of. I don't know. I think Matt was getting at the right point earlier when he was saying that like being prescriptivist, I can't say that word, with what people are going to choose to do with their time, especially people you don't know, is you don't understand their situation if you're going to be doing that, or you don't know that person individually. Does that capture sort of the essence of what you're saying, or is it closely related?
Yeah, it's you're not. People feel judged when anyone suggests anything that they might be doing, even if it's not specifically them. If it's something they do, they feel insanely judged if they hear it criticized,
right?
The behavior, because we've created a cultural ritualized self. That's all about consumption, but also presentation to others, and that's where the internet comes in. It's the crucible for both.
Mm-hmm.
And to say to someone, get less identity from the thing that has essentially been their identity machine, their entire lives, is going to result in a lot of hostility.
Yeah, I think it was like Mark said. You know, you could be a fisherman in the day and a poster in the evening.
Our division of labor doesn't allow for that.
Yeah, you can do all those things without becoming a fisherman or a poster.
Yeah, but no, like everyone who posts believes themselves to be a poster.
Yeah,
at like a deep level that they probably haven't even examined.
Most people on Twitter have like the things that they identify themselves as in their bios.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh well, that's the thing. That's a good way to tell if somebody has a lot of descriptive language in their biography. They're telling you that is how much of my identity is involved in this Twitter account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And so that is the degree of reasonableness you're likely to encounter on any point, personal, political, or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very low.
Well, I really like kind of what you were saying earlier about kind of like the having something that you're doing that's outside of like politics, it's outside of the internet. It's kind of, you know, it's something that you're passionate about that has like a beginning and an end product. Because I don't know if like... this is the only thing that I felt, but one of the things is I felt sometimes with leftist spaces is, you know, you have to be 100% dedicated to the cause at all times, or you're not really, you don't fit in as well there.
Right.
So it's like, oftentimes I felt that like, I'm not quite, I have too many outside hobbies to be a full, like fully in leftist spaces, but then also I'm like way too leftist to be in other spaces. And I think like, kind of this quote unquote girl lifestyle that you're talking about is like a good way to remind that it's like your identity can have many facets and you can be, you know, you don't have to be fully 100% like working towards an end goal at all times. You can have stuff that's like outside of that and still be good leftist.
And I think that the fact that we engage politically almost entirely online is the main thing that makes us forget that pretty obvious fact. Because the scale of things is so obvious and clear to us because we're seeing it in front of us. And our ability to interact with it through posting is so tangible emotionally that I think we get the sense of like, we can, if we focus our attention, like the implicit assumption of a lot of people online on all political persuasions, like alt-right, donut centrists, rose emojis, tankies, anarchists, everyone, is the idea that if everyone that agreed with me focused their intention on the problem at like a psychic level, just like will, they could like lift the Pentagon,
right?
You know, like Allen Ginsberg tried to do.
We're just not trying hard enough.
Yeah,
how do you do?
Exactly.
Did you do okay?
And the thing is that if you were in your real life and you saw how little you could actually engage with politics, if you have a job or any kind of, you know, family or any kind of responsibility, you would be like, that's insane. But when it's all at the symbolic level, and it's all within your grasp, then of course to do anything other than pay attention to it is to allow it to continue. But that kind of delusion is only maintainable if you are constantly refreshing your psychic shock, sense of outrage by exposure to things that are so beyond your practical level of engagement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's almost common sense in a way. Like, you cannot do other things unless you can live and unless you can sort of exist. It's an order of operations question. And if you're skipping that step, then you're defining yourself by the thing that you're doing that much more than you're doing anything.
Yep.
And yeah, I normally have, I think, a really good perspective on like balance in that way, but it just takes like, honestly, this like Tara Reid thing has really like thrown me for a fucking loop, to be honest. And in my head, it's like, oh, if I just explain to people like why their perceptions are incorrect about this. And like, just as like background, like I work, like I'm a sexual trauma therapist, and have like worked in that field for a while. And, so in my head, I'm just like, oh, people are rational. And if I just explain why their perceptions of things are incorrect, like, oh, they'll come to the light, so to speak. So I've been spending so much of my time just being like, no, that's incorrect, and here's why. And it's like very much not helpful. And it's like not helping my mental health. And it's like clearly not helping the discourse. So it's important. Like, even if you have like a general good like understanding of like when you need to disengage, sometimes it's just like, if there's a specific like topic that's very intense to you, it's very easy to fall down that rabbit hole, like very, very quickly.
Yeah. I think there's a weird kind of like thing where people, they think like, oh, like the people on my Facebook page, if I just start telling my like leftist ideology, like since they know me, maybe they'll like come around. Like,
you just have to do it. You have to do it really hard.
Yeah, but like, they just like don't think that their boomers, I mean, their fucking dad's boomer friend or whatever is gonna just like keep posting his shitty memes, even though he got like COVID-19 or something.
I have a hard time with that too.
Somebody in particular in mind. Note just got.
Yeah,
it's like a group. It's like a group therapy session when, so you know, my mom is a. I'm pretty sure my mom voted for Trump. We never talk about it, but she's like a Midwestern kind of live and let live. I would say she's like a normal centrist. Like, she's just like, oh, you know, I wish everybody would just get along and be happy. And she like goes to church and she does the whole religious thing. And we were talking about COVID-19 and she was like, you know, I understand people don't want to, shouldn't have to go out, but you know, we can't stop how we live. And I'm like, Mom, I'm like, you're talking about like biblical level human sacrifice.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally
massive death.
You're literally talking about like there is a bronze statue of a cow on Wall Street, and you're talking about sacrificing people to it. And she's like, well, and I'm like, I don't know what else to do. Like, I feel like I'm just going to rip my hair out, because if I can't relate to you, if I can't get this across to you, like, what hope do I have to get this across to a stranger?
It's maddening. The thing to remember is just people are so fundamentally unable to disconnect the notion of the economy from the free market as an idea that they have value. They would tell you that even if you piled up all those dead, it would be worth it to keep the economy going,
right?
Because the alternative is a anarchy and a horror that they couldn't even express. And so they will end up rationalizing those deaths. It'll have an effect, though. I mean, it's going to coarsen culture. I think you're going to see a rise in crime. I think you're going to see like people being just shittier, because knowing that we're allowing this to happen is going to have an effect. But at the conscious level, I think people have just, they know that they can only imagine worse if we don't go back to shopping.
Yeah.
Insane how alienated we all are from our government. Because like the conversation of like, people are saying, well, I know it's shitty, but like, what are you going to do? People have to go back to work. They have to put food on their table. And the idea that is the government's literal job never even enters into the equation.
Yeah,
it's insane.
I've been rattling in my head, and I'm going to talk about it on the stream after I get off with you guys. I have just not been able to get out of my head the quote from the senator from Louisiana.
Oh, God.
John Kennedy.
Him. We didn't vote for him.
Non-Fitzgerald Kennedy. When asked, when told that people would like more money, you know, to not die, said, have people in hell want ice water?
Yeah.
And I just, that, I honestly felt a sense of real vertigo there.
That dude, so.
That is a level that, of contempt, like, for the concept of governance from a high government official that really, I think, I would only imagine someone saying something like that right before they kicked you off of the, they kicked you off. What are those things called on a helicopter? The skids. Right after the kick, right before they kicked you off the skids of a helicopter, it would have to be that confident.
Yeah,
that there would never be any consequences.
So he,
the person they told that to, and he went on the record saying that
he is an indication. That guy is an indication that the fucking psychos that are running around like with their Nazi flags and their and like, you know, saying fuck you nurses, fuck you social distancing, you know, the Wolverine Queen in Detroit, like calling the governor that or whatever, like they've essentially won, they've defeated us once again. Because they're getting exactly what they want. They're getting the government and all these other things to reopen. Let me give you another example though of what I've sort of been seeing. I'm a teacher myself, and one of the things that's constantly happening, like we're still having meetings and we're still expected to like be following up with children and parents during this fucking crisis pandemic and all these other things. And when they hold these meetings, they're doing things like, oh, isn't it unfortunate that we are not having standardized testing this year? And sort of like the way I've been approaching it is I'm just like calling, I'm like texting everybody else during the meeting saying, no, this is great. The world is actually like, the world had to end for standardized testing not to happen, but things did not get worse. Or it's just this absolutely psychotic approach to kind of like make you feel like things must continue as they always have.
It's just like these, I Aaron has to listen to me rant about all this time. It's like, it's too on the nose. Like in our own house, like I rant about this shit, but it's like, this is too on the nose for Orwell. The way that people like are able to double think. I'll tell you something about this state.
It's so aggressive that it paralyzes people from action.
Well, when I took that 300-mile trip on the way back, and there's a huge like billboard on a law office like in outside of New Orleans in Baton Rouge, and it says,
"Thank you." Outside of New Orleans, okay, that is Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge. Okay, I'm just trying to get
different places.
Inside Baton Rouge.
Yeah. But there's a big sign that says, thank you, Cajun Navy. Now, if you don't know what the Cajun Navy is, the Cajun Navy is these group of like local yokels with boats who, whenever it floods around here, there's a hurricane or there's some kind of like disaster thing, they actually go out and will like pluck people off of the roofs of homes that are flooded, or they'll like provide like food or like whatever. But they're just citizens. And people here in Louisiana love them. They love these good old boys going out there in their boats, doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. But if you talk to these people about like socialism, they'll look at you like you're Satan himself. When I'm like, the Cajun Navy is not even socialism. It's anarchism. Y'all have moved past that and are still like pissed off at people who just like, you don't understand that during a crisis, the government, if the government's not going to give anybody more than $1,200 or provide a basic income for people in a crisis like COVID-19, what the hell are they even good for? And we just let that shit fly, and we'll just reelect dudes like John Kennedy. It's insane.
To put that specific dude in context, that when you're driving up from New Orleans to Baton Rouge for like about 50 miles, there are just billboards with Gordon. That's the attorney. There's just billboards like every couple miles with giant pictures of his face
standing on top of an 18-wheeler.
Whatever proverb is, no, it says "Blessed are the meek." It has like whatever that proverb is.
Like I said, it would make Orwell.
I almost crashed my car the first time. I was like, "This is a nightmare place." I was like, "Baton Rouge is a nightmare place, and no one should ever go there."
Driving trucks like on the Gulf Coast is an experience because you get all the billboards. Like, I used to have to go to Pensacola every Friday, and it's just like you drive smooth through Alabama and you always see the shit. Like, this is always like some pro-life stuff like that, but like just crazy
pictures of
shit,
fetuses, like, pictures of several months, like from yeah. birth, like I'm sorry, like not, moments from birth fetuses. Anyway,
but like people it's become so like unhinged from like how the ideas of how things work. Like people will do like people will want to help their neighbors, but why would I want to do socialism? Or like people don't understand how the government works. They're like, thank you, Trump, for giving me $1,200 instead of like asking, like telling the government that to give you your own money. Like give me the money that I've paid in taxes every single paycheck. Like
people just want to have like the power to only help those that they deem worthy.
Yep.
It's why it's like people who are racist. It's like, oh, well, like not that one. Like that one's a hard worker.
People who
give their shirt off their backs to their neighbor. But like, when you talk about, okay, well, I might have to pay for someone who uses drugs to eat. Like that's too much.
Like not thinking about that. Like they just are fine with a person on drugs, like not eating.
Yeah. We collectively as a society, like decided that, which is like
people don't want to be responsible for these things because then they're like accountable for them. So they just rather just put the power in these like awful people. And like, be like, oh, what are you doing? The right thing? Oh, of course. Keep it up. You're doing great. Like, despite all evidence to the contrary, you know?
Yeah. We live in a hellhole. It's awful. Oh,
it's terrible.
Anyway, Matt, have you ever been to the South?
We went to Florida a couple times. I've been to Texas. Not really spent a lot of time at the beach. I've been to New Orleans a few times, though.
Yeah.
What is your listenership like in the South? Because, like, I do think that there is this weird concept that, like, socialism is strictly a Northern concept and that, like, really only Northern people care about, like, collectivism in that way. But
it's not true.
Like, people
it's
don't
just
have
words.
That same... No, it's definitely not true, but, like, it's just, it's very interesting that, like, that's the concept. Because if you go to any neighborhood in New Orleans, like, I mean, we have the whole reason there are second lines is because... people banded together and like they do every year so that like you can have a good funeral when you die. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's a weird, I don't understand how like the North won the battle of like who's more leftist.
I honestly think it comes down to urban versus rural more really. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like this like left-wing movement that has, you know, appeared alongside the Bernie campaign and then after now, you know, is reorganizing itself, is in terms of its demographic, largely white and largely urban, college educated. Mm-hmm. And those people tend to live in cities.
Mm-hmm.
They look at places like suburbs or areas that they see as more rural, like the South in general, and sort of project there because, you know, most of them aren't from the cities they live in. They move from places that are more like that. And part of their identity is looking down on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't help but sort of think about these sort of other, like there is a certain like history of there's a different relationship with like state entities in the North than there is in the South. Like there's a, and I don't know if it's like a, you know, resistance to civil war, I'm sorry, pre-civil war sort of thing or whatever, but like there is an idea that the state itself, like as a group, cannot do any good, and it's best if just like individuals or like people with large, you know, bank accounts or whatever sort of like just drives everything in the area, which in the city it's still, that still exists for sure, but they still have, you know, subway systems and they still have, you know, trains that run all the way all around the Northwest, I know, the Northeast rather. It's like a different relationship with the state, I suppose.
I don't know. I think it's a lot of, maybe it's like Reconstruction propaganda. I don't know. Cause you hear a lot of people bitch about the DMV. And I mean, I know that's not just a Southern thing or the DMV or the post office, but I'm like,
I mean, the fact that the South is so universally dominated at the political level by Republicans doesn't help either.
No, it doesn't help at all.
It is weird in Louisiana right now. Cause like we are one of the few governors that's like, you should probably stay home. Like they're not trying to like flout their like allegiance to the president or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh my God. Thank God fucking Eddie Rasponi didn't win. Can you imagine? Jesus Christ. Can you imagine?
I was talking terrible. In apocalyptic terms during that election. Like if Eddie Rasponi wins, we're basically like preparing for the post-apocalyptic fallout of that kind of administration.
I mean, you're not wrong. We would have never closed if Eddie Rasponi.
And Eddie Rasponi was basically Yosemite Sam running against John Bel Edwards, who's Elmer Fudd.
He's the most centrist, like them, like the guy running.
He's a
pro-life Dem.
Yeah.
He's like John Bel Edwards is like a guy begging for his own life at like the open mouth of a grave. He's like always just trying to make everybody happy. Like he's like, please, any of you motherfuckers can kill me. Like I'm just so scared all the time. Yeah. Like
dude, I'm so mad at you right now, but
that was awesome. Now, speaking of apocalyptic, I want to ask you, Matt, to. You kind of put my thoughts into word, and I felt kind of embarrassed during still going on with COVID-19. And I kept saying people were like, oh, I'm so terrified of getting a disease. I'm so terrified of this. And I kept saying, I'm not scared of getting it. I'm not even scared of dying. Like my worst fear is of things going back to normal.
Right.
Like, well, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, because I don't want this just to be another thing that we're going to get through. And you went on kind of a rant on one of your blogs about that, being like, I'm trying to paraphrase, but like being on the Titanic and at least you knew like I'm dying, I'm going to die, but at least like ships are going to have enough lifeboats after
this. Yeah, right. It's a constructive process. It's not just having your sandcastle blow or destroyed by another wave. I think that there's a good chance that there's still enough slack in the world economic system. There's enough need for America to exist as the consumer of last resort that we're probably going to get some sort of global bailout on our retail sector just so that, you know, the entire thing doesn't collapse. And so we're going to get some time away from this. And I think the likeliest near-term scenario is what Felix always talks about, the same, only worse. The difference is, though, that it'll be the same over worse at a moment when it is realistically approaching the end of that cycle. The only question is sort of how close are we?
Well, it's like retail is becoming too big to fail, isn't it? Or it is too big to fail. Like the way that our
it's the entire economy.
Yeah.
Excuse you, Jeff. Banana Republic just went out of business. Was that Pier One Imports?
It was J.Crew, but Pier One Imports has been out of business. J.Crew, just, and Neiman Marcus, just. Yeah. Cool. You love to see it.
I guess that's what a crisis in a post-industrial society looks like, isn't it?
What, people dying and like companies staying alive?
No, like the crisis becomes that everything, like if it's not the banks, then the sector of the economy that's the most critical is the sort of like sales sector, the fucking Amazons and the mall and you know these stores.
Are you saying the middle?
Before the COVID even hit, you had the fact that WeWork was essentially given a private bailout by SoftBank to keep the global retail real estate economy going.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before COVID even was a tremor.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are all incredibly vulnerable, and now they're just got hit in about the worst possible way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we didn't get to work.
WeWork stuff was like, I was like, give it to me. Like, every podcast, every single thing about WeWork, I was like, yes, please let me hear more about this.
Theranos.
Before that, Theranos.
He was like, I'm into a non-socialist kibbutz, like a capitalist kibbutz. I was like, sounds great. Where do I sign up?
Yeah, like, the people.
Everything about it.
We basically have an economy that caters to carnies.
Fucking hell.
It's a nightmare.
It's like, and the thing is, I can't even take any solace in it because I would be, you know, accelerationism isn't my first pick, but if we're going to do accelerationism,
mine either.
Let's do it, man. Hammer down, pedal to the metal. But the thing that the other end of accelerationism is that things don't have to break. Like, the I'm seeing now that like the can just continuously be kicked down the road and nothing ever has to change. The machine can just limp and limp and limp and people just suffer under it.
I mean, yeah, we could just we just have the UN give us a new can. Old cans too wore out. Yeah. Bad metaphor.
I just it's one of those things that this is the time that we need to stop and recognize like how engaged people actually are currently versus like how they were before. Because even in 2008, the economy was really shitty and like a lot of people were struggling, but it really didn't affect everybody. Whereas now it's like people who like had jobs, they don't have jobs now. Like even like doctors and nurses are getting their hours cut. Like the people who are supposed to be completely recession proof are struggling. They're getting fired because the one thing you think would be booming, our hospitals and like our doctors they're not because of the way we have our insurance system set up. And so I really do feel optimistic that people are not going to be able to just wave this away. And even when we reopen, and like the thing that is like the most depressing thing to me is the fact that, you know, there probably is going to have to be a second wave of deaths that before people like really start taking this seriously,
they're going to reopen and a bunch of people are going to die. Wave.
And that's like really off. Yeah. But I feel like people who normally I come from, you know, like upper middle class, like very wealthy, non-politically engaged background, like people who I would never, ever have thought were like even engaged slightly have been sharing like straight up socialist stuff on Facebook. And I think people are really, they're more engaged than they have been in a while. And that gives me some hope.
Hope, what's that?
All right, Scott. You doomer over there.
Yeah, you guys are talking about all these new concepts. It's hard for me to keep up.
Yeah. So I guess we can sort of, as we kind of wind down. So considering the sort of like framework and the sort of mentality that we kind of like have been at least laid at the beginning, what are some things that we can sort of actually engage with, besides your sort of passions that would actually push or maintain like some kind of energy going forward? I don't know. Are we just treading water here?
I mean, we are in the literal sense that things are still unsettled to a degree that makes it almost impossible to know what direction to go.
Mm-hmm. So we're
that feels so weird, and then that sense of unreality is mirrored by the physical paralysis that many people are in and their inability to leave their homes. It's very, very odd. It's like you have this perfect symmetry of the space and superstructure, and mm-hmm. we're waiting for them to actually start rubbing against each other again.
Can you describe like that a little bit? Can you sort of like operate on the base and superstructure dynamics and how it kind of like is working out?
I mean, just generally that we have a situation here where a viral impact has created a situation where the biggest vulnerability of the world economy, I would argue, mm-hmm. or one of them anyway, America's consumer market, is been rendered largely unusable and maybe broken beyond repair, considering how many businesses have probably gone out of under already without a chance of coming back. Soup plantation, for the love of God, they're gone forever.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that.
Drop the F in the chat for that one.
Yeah, so RIP to some real ones. So you have it. So at its weakest point, it is destroying the base of the world economic order. At the same time, it is destroying its super. And I know that's not technically what a base is. We're talking about modes of production. I'm just meaning,
sure.
In general. And it is, but then. Your hope in a situation like this, where you have, a literate, mobilized population with access to communication technology that could hopefully create a cultural reaction to this crisis that could push for a reformation of the base, its biggest fracture point is its social isolation and the degree to which its culture and the technology it uses drive people away from one another. And now the same disease is exploited the fault line at its superstructurally most prominent point by literally driving people away from each other. Yeah,
physical isolation.
And out of physical contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, I guess, you know, I guess, what do you do? I mean, the acceleration, and when people talk about accelerationism, I kind of, like, don't think of it in the same way of that, like, you do or you don't do accelerationism, because it just happens. Like, acceleration of these...
Yeah, no,
like, shit,
accelerationism is just an observation of a state of
affairs. Exactly. And, like, you don't have to do anything to make the fucking horrible shit just start sliding down the greased-up slide, like I was talking about earlier. It just happens.
Right. Yeah, and so your role, then, is to be there and have a practice ready when the acceleration hits a critical point.
Yeah. Yeah. What does that look like?
Well, I don't know.
Come on.
We're still so goddamn... it feels like I said, it's so fluid. It's like there is a state during during earthquakes, there is a state of friction between the plates that can cause ground to actually liquefy.
Yeah.
And then it reaffirms. Oh, yeah. Obviously having dramatically changed.
Oh yeah.
I feel like right now we are in a liquid form.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. So we need to solidify around.
And in the
meantime,
you know, do some grill pilling to get you in a better position to act when you feel like there's something to do near you.
Yeah.
Hey man, totally, I can only work on that King Lear like draft so fast.
Jeff, as the man would say, that's a your problem, not a my problem.
I mean,
embrace the grill pill.
Oh, I mean, look, I lived that life my entire life, but I'm definitely, I don't know. There does seem, like, I don't know. One of the things that I noticed, and I actually mentioned this recently, but, like, it's almost that when everyone, when this sort of coronavirus thing happened, everyone that was working prior to the situation that was no longer doing so, kind of all had, like, nervous breakdowns simultaneously, and they just had subsequent ones following, too. There was, like a tremendous psychological shock that happened across entire parts of the entire populace, you know? So I guess what you mean, I guess that's what you mean by liquid.
I mean, I am, like, stone cold out of two jobs. Like, doing the radio is kind of, like, my only job left. The only one I don't get paid for, but, like, it's definitely a big, like...
We're terrible bosses.
Like, usefulness. Like, I don't have a lot of usefulness right now, so I'm, like, trying to, like, make sure people have, like, food and stuff. Mm-hmm. Make sure the people around me are just, like, fine. Like, checking in on people, but, like, I don't have a job. Like by society's standards as we grew up, like, I'm a useless person. Like...
Yeah. I guess, as I know you have somewhere to be at the top of the hour, so we can sort of wrap up. Is there anything else that you want to sort of say on your way out? And maybe, like, where we can, you know, anything you want to plug?
Stuff.
No, not really. People should try to, you know, find their grill, whatever it is.
Find your grill.
Find your grill,
I like
baby.
It.
Find your beach, like... just like Corona says. Oh, wait a minute. No, for the love of God, not Corona.
I love that, though. Like, find your grill is, like, definitely the bro version of follow your bliss, and I'm, like, here for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's right.
Thank
you. Synthesis. Both deserve that.
So is this,
I love that for the bros.
Is this like a Marie Kondo type thing?
Yes, kind of. It's
no,
find
that's,
your.
That's
it's,
sparking joy.
Okay.
It's clean your room meets find your bliss.
Okay. I like it.
There you go.
All right, and
I'm gonna make a.
But for bros, I'm real. Yeah. I'm here for it.
I'm gonna do a Kermit the Frog meme of Find Your Grill.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, listen to Chapo Trap House. You can also follow Matt on Twitter at Kushbomb. You can support us, Good Morning Comrade, on Patreon, patreon.com/goodmorningcomrade. You can follow us Facebook, Twitter, Good Morning Comrade, all that good stuff. Twitter Comrade Morning. Anybody else? Anything else on the way out?
No.
Check us out.
We're doing great over here. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Listen on Tuesdays, 8 o'clock on WHIVFM 102.3 or anywhere in the world. Good morning. I'm sorry, WHIVFM.org/listen. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you coming by. Welcome back anytime, obviously.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. All right, everybody. Love you. Bye.